Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, I'm Matt Giddo. When I'm not busy drinking rosé in Saint-Tropez, I'm listening to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast.
Hello and thank you very much for listening to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm back in the rugby dungeon
for a change.
For a change. I'm Tim with the guys that are always there in these brown Barker armchairs that you can see if you're watching on Facebook Live. And if not, just search Egg Chasers and go and find us and have a little look at what the rugby dungeon looks like. Smooth edit there, JB.
It's done though, isn't it? I can't hear. I've not got headphones on.
Evening, JB.
Evening, Tim.
Hello, Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Right. We've got... Let's just have a little listen, think about what's coming up on this podcast. It's going to be European Rugby Round 4 with some amazing games, particularly some finishes and some talking points as a result of them as well. Some highs for some teams, some lows for others. There's World Rugby, I don't know what the word is, not law changes, directive.
Yep.
And there is all kinds of other stuff to discuss as well. Dylan Hartley's sanctions and what the fallout has been since. A whole load of other stuff besides. But let me just take a moment to say thank you very much for listening. We know you have a choice. It's not like 3 years ago when there was no other podcasts about, is there?
Yeah, it's exactly like 3 years ago when there's no other...
Exactly the same. There's no
around.
Other comparison. There's plenty of...
There's another rugby podcast, but no one who directly compares to us.
And I would say that imitation is the greatest form of flattery. I would just ask, if you enjoy the podcast, would you just take one moment of your day, of your time, of your festive period, to just leave a little review on iTunes like Harry Nye. This one might make you tear up, boys. Harry says, this podcast is presented by three of the most entertaining... I don't know what that word is. Adroit?
I've heard the word, but I don't have it immediately available in my lexicon to tell you.
And charismatic rugby intellects to date. Not sure about that. Anyway, whether you're an avid fan or hardly even follow the sport, then what are you doing with your life anyway? Quite right. This podcast combines the highest quality rugby analysis with some of the most compelling punditry that will make you yearn for more.
Can't argue with this, can you?
Has he left the review in the right place? The episodes are as hard-hitting as a Dylan Hartley swinging up forearm. The opinions as controversial as a Kirtley Beale sin binning for a inverted commas high tackle, but surpasses the humorous banter of DJ Haskell. In addition, their presentation is as harmonious as the number one bestseller's Barista Chic, and as complete as a New Zealand backline with Dane Coles playing as both inside and outside centres.
Wow.
Honestly, couldn't recommend the podcast enough. Hear me now, believe me later. You'll wish you'd made the start to listening to the podcast earlier. Harry and I, one solitary tear is rolling down my cheek.
What a great guy.
What a top man. Thank you very much for that. And yeah, leave your review on iTunes. Just take a moment to do so. And also, you'll be listening to this at some point. I don't know when or whether you're still at work or on the festive period, but just a quick reminder too, if you haven't already, give your loved ones the greatest gift that you can give.
Did this for my mum.
You've given your mum a...
Cornerstone razor.
A Cornerstone razor.
Of course, yes.
Yes, because you listen to us, you get a special £10 discount on your first order. What better a present could there be for a loved one than a beautiful, free... engraved aluminium precision engineered shaft to go along with those six razors, which you could get. Your first Cornerstone box comes in a lovely little gift box for £4. Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, or
egg 10 at checkouts.
Rugby, rugby, rugby. So much rugby to talk about.
Where to start?
Well, JB, what were you doing in Vienna?
What was I doing? I've been held against my will on a family excursion. So I spent most of my day on Friday. Well, we arrived on Thursday. We did some stuff. Then on Friday, my only focus was watching Glasgow Racing. That was my only thing. So I tried illegal streaming. I got in contact with the local rugby club there, Vienna Celtic. Then I got in contact with them, and then they offered my services for the next day. Unfortunately, they didn't have a game. I phoned five different bars, and in the end, I had to bide my time and wait for it to come out on YouTube illegally. So I illegally watched Racing versus Glasgow at 4 a.m, when it eventually got released on YouTube.
Wow, that is commitment.
Isn't it just?
Me and JB are slightly relying on you to have watched lots of rugby, Phil, because I spent more time than I'd like to in Gatwick Airport as a result of the fog and loads of grounded planes.
Well, and the strikes as well.
I didn't even realise there was that too. It was absolute carnage in Gatwick Airport, and so I made it to Leinster versus Northampton, but not in time to do the pre-match interviews with Leo Cullen and Jim Mallinder, because it took me all day to get to Dublin from London. So
well, fortunately, I have seen Connacht, and I have seen Leinster, and I have seen Racing.
Oh, I've caught up with much of it, but unfortunately, I was very much in the minority of people in Gatwick Airport when there was a screen in the bars that were there. Funnily enough, there were more people that wanted to watch football than rugby. Yeah. I know. Sad but true.
Hmm. But fortunately, I have seen virtually every game, most of it live as well. So
amazing.
So why don't we start with Glasgow?
Phil, what was your highlight of the weekend?
without my Ulster hat on, one of the best games and one of the best performances was the Claremont Ulster game, and Claremont's performance was magnificent. If you're watching that as a neutral, and I guess when Ulster were 28 points to nil down after 45 minutes, I almost was watching it as a neutral because it was over. It was a hell of a performance. Absolutely clinical through the middle and out wide. Monstrous up front, set piece perfect. Camille Lopez pulling the strings with Morgan Parra.
Questionable facial hair, however.
There's some questionable facial.
Chin strap beards, not a strong look.
No, it's not. No, it's really not.
But that is a hell of a performance, and one that probably reaffirms their position after maybe a slight blip last week, but reaffirms Claremont's position as one of the probably two favourites in the competition.
Oh, I think so. I mean, with the French teams, we know they have money, but it's how you spend that money.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll come on to Racing later because I've got some damning words for them. And also Toulon. I mean, Toulon have been Toulon now for 5 years of just Route 1 boring rugby. They're all spending money, but if you're not spending your money wisely and doing good things with it like Claremont are, there's just no point in having it.
Use some of that money to get a nutritionist to just live or with a gym. Matthew Bastereau. How about
yeah.
that?
Yeah. yeah. Or a gym. Or, you know, a pitch to train on. Or, you know, a coach that shows up on time. Those just little small things.
Small things. It's all about the 1%, yeah. as Clive Woodward said.
Marginal gains.
Yeah. I mean, it does baffle me, actually, with the French teams. They ignore almost all of this stuff, except for Claremont, who are run more like an English team than anyone else, actually. Or a Pro 12 team.
But even
good
point.
Wow.
Sorry,
wow.
I've got a fact about Munster, and I need to credit it to the person who told me this fact because I love it. Sorry, I can't remember who told me. I will as soon as I remember, I will give credit to this person. But Munster, until this season, did not train in one place. Do you know this?
No.
The team was split in half. Half in Limerick, half in
Cork.
Wherever else it is that they live. And they'd come together once a week to train. What? Did you know that?
What?
Yeah, it's not until they...
Historically, is that what they did? Until, through the great years?
Yeah, until maybe 2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. I can't remember who told me that. So, I found that amazing.
Did they split it backs and forwards, or was it just where you lived?
Just where you lived. So they do all the strength and conditioning. They'd have two locations. Because, actually...
Okay. Well, on the days where all they've got is a strength and conditioning session, but surely there'd be a lot more days where there'd be a rugby session as well. You can't do that separately.
Don't know.
And team sessions, like, Whiteboard and video sessions.
If there's gym sessions, I get gym. So maybe morning gym session, then get together after lunch for team session.
No, they got together once a week.
Wow.
So
not sure I believe this.
I need to
Munster fans, let us know. Can you verify this?
Yes, verification would be very good.
Well, there are lots of Munster, well, maybe not Munster after this weekend, but more generally, lots of Pro 12 fans who I don't think you've had your medicine quite enough, JB. Do you want to eat a little bit of humble pie?
No, not even none. Zero.
Over your
zero
you expect
humble pie.
The response to that question to me.
I didn't expect anything else, but you've been saying you're going to have some damning words for Racing. Your damning words for the Pro 12 as a competition, and the teams within.
This is silly, juvenile, gotcha podcasting right now. I have been guilty in the past of saying all Pro 12 teams are terrible about a year ago. I didn't actually mean that, but I do mean this. The Pro 12, I'm not going to say it for much longer because people are sick of me saying it, is a terrible league. And if you don't believe me, wait until we do the Pro 12 report and we go, that's a win, that's a win, that's a win, that's a win. Half the league are really good. Half the league are outstanding in a lot of ways. The other half is rubbish. And that's what I carry on saying. The top end quality is as good as anyone.
Or better.
Well, yeah.
On the strength of what we're seeing this season, better.
Or even better. But the bottom half is abysmal, and that cannot be escaped. And until they sort out that bottom half, and there's also systemic issues with Pro 12. For instance, away fans don't travel because it's too far. So there is a lot wrong with the Pro 12. Yep. Now, it's the Pro 12 league, not the Pro 12 teams.
Okay, fine. Well, on the subject of the Pro 12, Phil, you must have some facts on how they've fared again. We've been keeping a tally of our kind of Ryder Cup. When Aviva Premiership and Pro 12...
By the way, does points difference count? Let's hope not.
When Aviva Premiership and Pro 12 play each other. So what's the tally again?
So the tally this week, we've now on 11 games played in this season's Champions Cup only. Because I think this would actually be exacerbated if you included the Challenge Cup.
Yeah, it would.
But 11 games played, Aviva have won 4, Pro 12 have won 7. And the points difference is 317... to 259 in the Pro 12's favour, which would be significantly greater if you took Zebre out of there.
But you can't take Zebre out of there, and that's the problem with the Pro 12.
Well, on that one, Chris Kowaliuk tweeted us at Rugby Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter at Rugby Podcast. He tweeted us and said, "Who looked more out of place this weekend, boys? Timmy Asora, Zebre, or Northampton?"
Yeah.
And then on a similar kind of light-hearted vein, Dara Ruddy, long-time listener, said, "Boys, do weak teams like Sale, Northampton, Racing undermine the integrity of the Champions Cup? Maybe the top 8 Pro 12 teams should qualify."
Yeah, well, maybe. The last thing on this. With the Pro 12, the Irish provinces have got their stuff together big time. There's no two ways about that. Just look at the current result. Up in Scotland, the SRU have basically said we only have enough money for one team, so all the good players can go there. And as for Wales, well, that's just a snake pit. So when you look at this, you are actually getting, in the case of Scotland, a whole national team. I mean, Glasgow is basically a Scotland 15 playing, so they should be doing well.
They're not too far off. They've got a very, very good team.
Mm. And they're coached well. That's the other thing. With the future Scotland coach.
Yeah.
So, it's a very hard argument to say Glasgow aren't actually a Scotland team.
Well, it really does feel European this year. After last year when it didn't feel like a proper European tournament. This year it's feeling brilliant.
Well, yes, last year wasn't too bad. A few years ago when it was just pure French domination. Then it felt very, very sad. I think one year was there 4 French quarterfinals, or at least 3 in Saracens. So yeah. I completely agree with that.
Yeah, you've had, I think, 3 plus Saracens in the last 4.
Yeah.
Maybe twice.
So Clermont was your highlight in terms of a performance. They did look extremely dominant. My highlight of the weekend was a bit of Galway magic on the west coast of Ireland and Connacht with a last-minute win. Amazing story. What a kick he nailed it. Bearing in mind he had a 45% success rate this season, did Carty, from the tee, and nailed a kick when it really mattered to pull off a famous victory against Wasps. Wasps self-destruct or Connacht digging in?
Part Wasps self-destruct, part Wasps not scoring points and not really ever grabbing the game by the scruff of the neck when they had some opportunities to do so earlier on.
Yeah, Wasps have only got themselves to blame for this. They, in fact, the first 20 minutes of the game might have been the worst game of all time. I mean, they were knocking balls on left, right and centre. No one could get any phases going. It looked rubbish. Now, they sorted that out second half, big time. But Wasps had it under control. Not only did they have it under control, when their bench came on, their bench was so far superior to the Connacht bench. I mean, the fact that they didn't close it out is criminal. So they can blame the end refereeing decision as much as they want. They should have kicked more. They should score more points. They should kick more goals. They should have stopped the drive.
A couple of things on
it's all on Wasps.
Well, let's talk about the end of that game, because I think there's one thing. Everyone's talking about the refereeing decision, which we can get into briefly in a moment. But I think it's also worth pointing out, for all the stick we may well on this podcast give World Rugby and other people, give them a kicking every now and again for some of the directives. Let's just look that. Would have been, if it weren't for the law change that came in a few years ago with the 5 seconds, use it, that game would have been a boring last few minutes, and Wasps would have won and taken 30 seconds over each one of those rucks. So quite often directives...
But why didn't they just carry on doing that?
I mean, well, I know they got lazy in their rucking, and it was it was an amazing finish. But so we got a tweet here, and it was from I believe it's a Wasps fan who said, Woodley71 tweeted us at Rugby Podcast, said, John Muldoon conned the ref. I think he's quite angry.
Mm.
What do we make of that? John Muldoon, so to recap, Connacht got a penalty with a couple of seconds left. And
it was the penalty was awarded as the clock turned 18. Can I just say, there was no time.
Isn't that Muldoon's job?
So what he did is he went up to the new referee, had only been on the field a couple of minutes due to injury, and said, I think his words were, the new law means we can kick to touch, can't we? He didn't ask a question, he kind of made a statement.
Yeah.
Very canny and clever.
But hang on, I thought that was the law. I thought you could...
It will be.
Yes, they have changed it, but it's not in play yet. Ah. It doesn't come into play in the Northern Hemisphere
so
until
I was
next
holding
season.
Court in a bar in Vienna, acting all smug, as if I knew that, as if this was actually a law. I was like, no, guys, you need to understand this. Right, so that's not actually a law.
It will be, and it's already been announced that it's going to be the law from next season.
But it's
not in play yet.
John Muldoon, fair play, that is brilliant captaincy. He Darren Browned the referee.
Look, it's his job. And you look back in history, you've got examples when Jason Leonard comes on the field and says, oh, just tell me about the scrum, sir, and I'll fix it for you. You know, England have constantly had captains that are good at talking to refs. Martin Johnson was one of the best.
The best captains and the best players will be on the edge of the law frequently. Because he could have... I mean, the ref arguably there, if he'd have known he was trying to con him, he could say, no, unsporting behaviour, penalty against, reverse it, Wasps kick to touch.
Exactly.
I mean, so he was walking a fine line, but got away with it, and it's an incredible victory.
And so many players are out there trying to influence the ref. No, I say fair play to him, and I think it actually... topped off a wonderful performance by him. He was heroic throughout the whole thing. His carries. The best moment he had in that game was not Nick Leeson-ing the ref, but in fact, when he made that turnover right on his own line from the Wasps drive.
Yeah.
That was superb.
I'm trying to think what other well-known public figures we can use as a... Was it an adjective? Or a verb? An Ingwood, it's a verb, isn't it?
Because we've
Darren Browning the ref, Nick Leeson-ing the ref. What other one would work?
Madoffing the ref. Bernie Madoffing. Robert Maxwelling. You could.
What would that be?
Well, Robert Maxwell stole from a pension fund.
Okay.
Didn't he robbed all the Miriam.
So how would that work in terms of a referee?
Well, because he stole, he like conned.
Oh, I see.
He's a con.
I'm trying to think. What about?
I mean, Madoff would have to be a pyramid scheme of some sort.
Was it a pyramid scheme or was it a Ponzi scheme, Madoff?
Yeah, same sort of thing.
Yeah, but there's a distinct difference, isn't there?
I've got no idea, is there?
Yeah, pyramid scheme, there's actual consideration, whereas a Ponzi scheme is just taking money and doing nothing with it.
No, there
you
go.
Pyramid scheme, you need to actually buy something or sell
something. You could say Pascal Pape... Jim Broadbented the referee.
Who's Jim Broadbent?
just a respected actor.
Oh, right. I think these need some work on before we go to air with them.
Possibly. That'd be my possibly. There you go.
Suggestion.
No, I was going to pump that out, but that's not going to run, is it? That's not going to go. I think I'll move on.
Yes.
I think I'll move on. So we're kind of all like Wasps. You had that in your control. If you're a Wasp fan and you're a bit angry, then it's kind of tough. Your team shot themselves in the foot and could have just closed
exactly
that game out.
Right.
Jamie Ray tweeted, though, said, rule number one, never bet on your own team. And he's posted a little picture of an accumulator bet,
yeah,
which would have paid out a couple hundred quid if Wasps had won.
Yeah.
So, and who's to say that Connacht wouldn't have gone and won anyway? Because if the referee had said there's no time, wouldn't. It's not
give
like
it to Bundy.
Then they would have tapped
Bundy,
it, given it to
Matt
Bundy
Healy.
Aki, and exactly.
Although Matt Healy might have been off the field at that point, but still, the point remains.
Yes.
Oh my God! I tell you who had a bad game is Adiaki. I can't say his name now. Knee
the winger.
Purple Aki.
Adiaki.
Adiaki. He was completely
not Purple Aki.
Definitely not Purple Aki.
For large, but in fact, no, that's not really a fair criticism because a lot of the team in the first half were completely headless.
Yeah.
So yeah, it wasn't actually that high a quality match. Truth be told.
Can I tell you one really nice moment? Not directly from the Connacht match, but I was in the tunnel in the Aviva Stadium when that game was finishing, watching on a little monitor, and. Oh, no. In fact, it was after the game this happened because that game finished before.
Oh, I know what you're about to say.
Do you?
I think I do. Go on.
No, so it was after the Leinster-Northampton game and all the players were coming in through the tunnel to go to the changing room and Robbie Henshaw saw the highlights of the games were playing on the monitor where I was stood in the tunnel and he walked past and had a look and went, Connor, they're in. And he did a little jump and a fist pump. So it was kind of it was quite a nice moment for those Connacht fans.
Save me
that
his crocodile joy.
if
he meant it, he'd have stayed there. should we talk about the North?
Glasgow.
I think we should talk about Northampton and Leicester in the same breath.
Well, there was talk before this game of, from a Leicester perspective, if Cockerell doesn't get a win, job's on the line, yeah.
Yeah, I heard
now
this
now people
too.
Are saying the same thing about Northampton's game against Sale after Northampton's performance.
Oh, I think they should just end it. I mean, I don't think it should be about Sale at all. It should just be ended.
Well, this is the thing. So when a director of rugby or anyone is so close that every single game, even like the Sale-Northampton game is just a regular league game, When those games are the kind of games that will mean someone's going to be losing their job, they're close enough already to be losing their job. Like why wait for one potential positive result that is just going to draw it out for a few weeks longer?
See, I'm not really a big fan of changing staff mid-season.
I'm with you.
Yeah,
Jamie.
I'm with you.
It's not from
well.
Some high-minded principle. I just think it's really difficult to change your systems and your strategies. I mean, look at Todd Blackadder. He's come in, and even though he came in at the start of the season, he's done very little with Bath so far. He's basically had continuity and slowly changed things.
That said, he has also brought in a kind of freshness.
Oh yeah, he's done a lot on the atmosphere
and the atmosphere and
the culture,
the morale and the culture and. Clearly, that's happening at Bristol a little bit as well.
Yes.
So it can have a short-term impact. And maybe if the objective is to get top six and they've revised their objectives and that's where Northampton see that they, you know, the minimum that they want to get, maybe they feel that that would happen without Jim Mallinder and Dorian West. However, you've got to imagine what it's like for the owners and the board at Northampton.
A couple
of years ago, and this guy was winning them... The Aviva Premiership.
He's bought them from the Championship. He's won the Premiership. But when you start firing coaches, in this case Alex King as a scapegoat, and you still lose, and it's not about losing sometimes. Sometimes, like Exeter, it's about the manner of the loss. So Exeter, you can see, even though they lost, I don't know, 5 out of 6 of the opening games, you could see what they were trying to do. You could see there's a performance. And these weren't bad losses. 60 points... is a pretty bad loss.
Yeah.
It's the manner of the defeat, not the defeat itself. And that's for me. I mean, I'm not sure if they change it now or they change it in the off-season, but they have to change it.
I'm not sure what I would make of it if I was a Northampton fan and I heard the director of rugby in a post-match chat saying that after losing record defeat in Dublin against Leinster and leaving your experienced players out and losing by 60 points to 13. I don't know how I'd feel if I heard my director of rugby saying, oh, it's good experience for these young guys.
Oh,
we can learn from this.
And actually, you know, for the first 20 minutes, or first 10 minutes, Northampton looked really good.
Well, you after know, half an hour, they were leading.
They were ahead, yeah, 13 to 8.
And yeah. then, I mean, there was a noticeable difference, because I watched Connacht and the Leinster game back-to-back, right? And the difference, the step of intensity and standard between the two games was noticeable.
Yeah.
You think?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the collisions going in the Leinster game were just so much bigger. So they go into half time, and then when they come out, I think the thing which summed it all up was that Sean O'Brien try, when he kind of crawls over the line. And the first few were just stupid mistakes. And then after that, they lost all character, all will to play. And, well, you end up shipping 60 points, which is just not acceptable. I mean, that is a will thing. That is a pride thing rather than your players aren't good enough. Because these players are good enough, at least to make it respectable. 60 points is not respectable.
No, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Absolutely embarrassing for them all, for everyone involved in that.
Mm.
Like you say, though, this weekend will be a true test of Northampton season against Sale.
Oh, I think the test is over now, because...
It's because they've still got the opportunity. So the European Cup is out the window, really, but they've still got an opportunity in the Premiership to improve their season. But I don't know if they can do it, because this season they've demonstrated nothing that suggests they will do.
Here's a question, because we were very, very complimentary of Tom Wood and his really honest, brutally honest assessment of Northampton's last game against Leinster at home. How in the week as well, Ben Foden came out and there were quotes from him which said, for whatever reason, we're just not up for it at the minute and we need to put pride back in the shirt. Again, I was quite kind of heartened. I thought, isn't it great to hear senior players talking really honestly? And I think that's kind of a good thing. And then there was something that I felt a little bit uncomfortable about, it where there's senior guys, experienced players in individual interviews. When you piece it all together, I think the Tom Wood one was fantastic. He was the captain on the night, and that's great. But then afterwards, when it's kind of an individual saying, yeah, the squad's just not up for it.
No, I'm not having this.
It feels a little bit, I don't know, I don't like it. There's a time, I don't like, it just feels like there's something a bit toxic going on.
No, I think if the message from Tom Wood, and I know he's got a lot of praise for this, I don't necessarily think it's worthy of praise, and also Ben Foden, if the message coming from them is, I as an individual have not done the best that I can do for this team, and I need to work on my own errors and put this right, and maybe I was flat before the game, you know, that's absolutely spot on. That is honest. When you throw it over to the squad...
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, if you can't name the person, it doesn't count. So if he says Ethan Waller was flat before, or, you know, just throwing out, oh yeah, the squad aren't quite right. No, Tom. What have you done recently to improve your performance? Are you working as hard as you can work? And that's all that that really matters. These boys should be talking about themselves, not about the squad, if they're going to be critical in any way.
That's kind of what I was getting at. On last week's podcast, I was like, how brilliant was it to hear Tom Wood like that? And that's great. And I think from the captain, you can kind of take that. But when you piece it all together, exactly what you're describing, JB, is kind of how it made me feel when I read Ben Foden as well.
The only mitigating factor for Tom Wood is that he played his heart out against Leinster.
Yeah.
So you do give him a bit of leeway. Ben Foden, not so much.
Yeah. And then the Leicester game.
Yeah.
Leicester, yeah.
Well, when it really matters.
Jim Mallander under pressure. What do you reckon his letter to Santa will look like, Jim Mallander? I've been good over these last few years, Santa. I always come out and smile and be friendly and nice. And
he's written to Santa for an earthquake roughly Richter scale 10, and he just wants to be swallowed up by the earth. That's what he wants.
Right, well, you think it's that bad? You don't think an amazing attack coach, some three quarters that right, so it's a fly half that can actually pull the strings in the top level.
No, that's not fair. That isn't fair, because
I think it is.
Myler has pulled the strings for a long time.
Stephen Myler next year will be playing at Bristol or London Irish.
Wow, hear him now.
No, I'm not saying
I'm with Tim on this.
I'm not saying I know that, by the way. It's a demonstration of he's like Shane Geraghty now. His best years are gone, and I just don't think...
But what is different between Stephen Myler now and Stephen Myler 5 years ago?
The game of rugby is 5 years further on.
Oh, that's not bad. That's a good answer.
He's not. We said it last season, we've said it this season even more. He is not getting the best out of that back line, because that back line is experienced, talented, fast, strong. Mm-hmm. Everything you look
for. They're
huge. Yeah. They're a good back line, and he's getting nowhere near. He's standing so deep. He's not attacking the line. The passing is slow. His kicking from hand and for sticks is generally good, but he's just not making the work.
But deal with the fly half. It's not like he plays the game like Manu Tuilagi, and eventually those athletic traits will fade. In fact, if anything, he's never had that much in the way of athletic traits. His game is mental, and he has been a good game manager. He has been a good kicker. You'd expect these traits to improve over time as he...
Perhaps.
Like Andy Goode.
And maybe
like
over the last 5 years.
Hodgson, you know, like these really classy fly halves in the past. Gitto.
Yeah.
They are getting better with age.
What we've seen over the last 5 years is defence is getting better and quicker off the line and all the rest of it. Standing that far back. Anyway, but I agree. I think that...
But that is something he'll be told to do, surely.
So Northampton are the latest side to enter the George Ford race, it's understood.
I can see that.
And that might be Northampton's only kind of positive to take out of it is now Bath might actually go, oh yeah, go on, Northampton aren't a threat. We could let him go there all sail.
Oh, it wouldn't take much for him to become a serious threat, though, would it?
Yeah, you get that pack and that back line firing. I think Malinder will be asking for a Fijian doctor to come over with his leaves and fix his son, because he probably sees Harry as the solution to all problems.
What is wrong with Harry at the moment?
I think it's an ankle injury.
Ooh, I wonder what that would mean. I mean, Baths have seen what's happened with getting rid of a DOR and then your star asset.
Well, this is what I was thinking. Yeah. I mean,
they've got to tread carefully, haven't they?
Well, Mike Ford had a loss today, and he's not on particularly safe ground anyway. No one is at Toulon. So, Malinder will be the next Toulon coach, and then Harry is going to ask to leave.
What they need to do.
Hang on, where are the Malinders from?
No. I think if Mike Ford stays... No,
Blackpool?
Mike. No. I've sussed out what's going on here. Mike Ford is at Toulon, not because he wants to coach Toulon, but because he wants to engineer George's move to Wasps. So he's going to sign. He's going to get Bujalal's money and to buy Sippers.
Well, listen to this.
Give him enough cash that they can sign.
Well, listen to this
Ford.
For a conflict of interest of the highest order. Hypothetically, of course. Wasps want Ford, but Wasps have Sippers.
Yeah.
Dai Young is interested in Ford, as he should be. That's his job.
As everyone
but
should be.
But what's he going to do with Sippers? Because Sippers doesn't want to move. So they flag up, do you want Sippers, Toulon? Toulon do not want Sippers unless it means they can engineer a move for Ford. Now, what I mean by that is Mike Ford does not like Danny Cipriani. He does not want him in the team. But he might take him if his son gets a move to Wasps.
His son gets a 100% increase in pay.
Yeah. But do you not think that is an incredible conflict? If Cipriani signs for Toulon, I mean, the world should just end, right? Because that is completely immoral, if it happens.
Well...
If that's the thinking, if Mike Ford
is thinking like that... Which he's never going to admit to, even if he was. But...
Well, no, but we do know that Mike Ford does not like him as a fly half, which is why they haven't been able to move it anyway. But, you know, just a little, hey, maybe, you know, maybe George would be best here. Who knows? But Harry Malinder, I'm sure the Malinders are from the Northwest. I'm sure they are.
Jim
Malinder was a maths teacher at William Hume Grammar School about a mile up the road from where we are now.
So, are we all agreed that next year, oh my God, Sale's midfield is going to be George Ford and Harry Malinder?
Harry Malinder.
And I tell you what happened today as well at Sale is... Owen Farrell was getting a lot of stick about not being a real Northerner. And of course, if he wanted to demonstrate he was a real Northerner, he could do one thing, couldn't he?
Big hits.
No sign for Sale.
Sign for Sale, yeah.
Imagine that play for rugby 10, league. 10, 12, 13.
Yeah, go back and play rugby league.
Yeah. That'd be proper Northern.
Yeah, right.
45 grand, here I come.
So a Richter scale 10 earthquake to swallow Jim Malinder up and failing that...
A Fijian doctor.
A Fijian doctor.
Miracle worker.
On his. In fact, if we could have, like, for your team, your DOR's Christmas letter to Santa, tweet us at Rugby Podcast with some suggestions. You were going to move over to Leicester. Richard Cockerell. He might be wanting that same Fijian doctor.
Or same earthquake.
Yeah. Safe for another week at least.
Jim, I'm coming over. Well, this is kind of the opposite to Northampton, isn't it? Which is, this team showed some real heart and some real resolve. And as a Leicester fan, I'm not a Leicester fan, right? But as Leicester fans should be very, very, very proud of this entire performance. I think it's brilliant.
It did feel like one of those historic Leicester European performances, yeah, based around the kind of ferocity of the pack and the kicking of Owen Williams, which was, I mean, that final kick from 54 metres or whatever it was, with that much pressure, was just incredible. It was absolutely brilliant.
Now, can I float a theory?
Go for it.
We've just spoke about Malander losing his job.
Yeah.
Rightly so. If this form continues, maybe rightly so anyway, regardless of what happens, right?
Yeah, you can't see any other outcome. I don't want to get to a place where we're going, sack him,
get him out of here.
It's very football and reactionary, isn't it?
Now, this was serious, that Cockerell may well have lost his job on the weekend if Munster had beaten Tigers.
Yeah.
I think if Leicester would have sacked Cockerell, or if anyone's calling for Cockerell to be fired, they are barking up the wrong tree entirely. I think Richard Cockerell is not blameless in this, but the blame lies elsewhere. And it's quite frankly with Aaron Major.
But you've spoken in the past several times about his repeated signing of injured and injury prone players.
Yeah,
and
that is
Cockerell.
So, yeah, I mean, you've got that. So I'm kind of conflicted, because I have said in the past, Richard Cockerell signs injury prone players. This is outrageous, because you've only got a finite amount of cash. So you can't hide behind injuries. That's one thing. Leicester made the decision 3 years ago to make this guy director of rugby when he didn't have enough experience. I don't think that they wanted to do it. He was interim, and then he signed, and they've stuck with him for this period of time. And I remember when we first did the podcast, most of the time that we spoke about Richard Cockerell, we were saying, he's whinging about the ref, he's whinging about that. Well, you don't hear that now. You actually hear a very introspective, very interesting guy who seems to have mellowed with time. And in fact, I think he's got better at his job.
Yep.
But what the Leicester board have tried to do is almost, I'm not going to say undermine him, because I don't think that is what they wanted to do, but they've tried to supplement what he does with Aaron Major. And bar the initial 6 months, when they looked like they could play a bit, it has gone backwards at a rate of knots. You've got the Glasgow game where they didn't create anything. You've got
Munster away.
Nil. Yeah. They brought in Scott Hansen, who by all accounts did not very much for the defence. Cockerell's not the guy to go, because when they score, it's through forward-based stuff. It's not through this all-singing, all-dancing attack, which quite frankly doesn't exist.
But I will say, I think Jim Mallander and Richard Cockerell have one thing in common, and that is that they haven't rested on their laurels a little bit. Maybe I don't mean that, but you look at the amount of money that Jim Mallander was very honest this week in another interview. He said, we haven't recruited well enough in the backs. And I think what's basically happened is Jim Mallander had a league-winning team, which he then tried to keep together and didn't sort of trim the dead wood enough. Mm. Think of it like gardening. He didn't prune and go, I'm not getting enough value out of that person. The inflated wages mean more and more of his cap is being taken up by players he already had. Look, Richard Cockerell, I think, has done the same. Look at their front row. It's not the feared front row in the way it was a few years ago. And they will be paying Marcus Ayerza and Longo Mulapola and guys like this.
Dan Cole and massive
money. And so I think there's just not been enough pruning going on. And I think that's where, kind of in an old Sir Alex Ferguson way with his old Man United teams, when kind of Paul Ince and David Beckham,
or Bill Belichick more.
Or Bill Belichick in NFL. Just go, actually, yes, you're very good, but you're not. I'm not getting value for you as you are, and I can let someone else pay you this massive money, and I'll squeeze more value elsewhere.
It's such a good point, the value. It's the old Moneyball thing, and it's so appropriate because of the salary cap that Manu Tuilagi, who is the highest paid player at Leicester, or certainly one of them, on more than 400k a year, have they got anywhere near that value over the past couple of seasons?
Nope.
He's played half a dozen games, and The last two games he's played, he's got a yellow card in both of them.
Yeah. Well, we'll come back to cards in a second. you know, no one can judge if that's fair or not at the moment. I think that's a pretty good analysis, Tim.
And then you look at Northampton, think how much Luther Burrell will be on, think how much Dylan Hartley will be on.
Do you know what? Luther Burrell, bless him. Luther Burrell has got a lot in common with ex-Welsh captain Michael Owen. Do you remember him?
Yeah.
He made one mispass and immediately signed a new deal. And I think the story was that he also signed a deal with Gilberts. Obviously, they make balls, but they used to make boots as well.
Yeah.
Deal was for $30,000 to wear their boots. Yeah, so that's kind of Luther. He's had two or three good games, signed a new deal. Good for him.
He had a really good couple of years. I know Sale would have been kicking themselves a few years ago that they let him go.
Well, no, because I saw him at Sale and he didn't do anything.
No, he didn't do anything at Sale, but he never really got a crack. He went straight to Northampton. And again, that was a good example. Northampton picked up a guy that was surplus to requirements that Steve Diamond didn't really rate and turned him into an England international.
Who Steve Diamond probably now doesn't rate.
No, he probably now doesn't rate.
Yeah, but I was always right about Luther.
But
this is exactly what we're talking about. And, you know, in the game that I was working at today, in the pre-match interview with Steve Diamond, he mentioned it pre-game that, our squad's paid half as much as other squads. But again, we've mentioned it a number of times on the podcast. Yes, Saracens have gone out and got in Will Skelton on a short-term deal. Yes, they've got internationals all over their team. But yes, they also got Petrus Duplessis from the Championship, Chris Wiles from the Championship, Richard Barrington from the Championship. The list goes on. So
Ben Spencer. Yeah. Below that, exactly. He's playing for Cambridge and National
One. Duncan Taylor.
Yeah.
So I think it's knowing when to prune and when to invest. And I think Richard Cockerell, getting back to Leicester, I think he along with Jim Mallander, have invested poorly.
Mm, yeah. Quite possibly.
And that's why they find themselves in this difficult situation.
Hmm. Yeah.
Shall we talk about a different game?
It was a very good win.
Well, you just touched on the cards thing. Let's jump to this, because I think this will be, again, we've had some criticism in weeks gone by for stop talking about red cards and stuff, Tim.
Strap in, boys. We've got about an hour.
However, World Rugby have come in with some new directives, which are all to do with the high tackle.
Which are mental.
Mental. What do you make of them?
Okay, so the first one is fine. A dangerous high tackle. We know what it is. It's red. Fine. Move on. Okay.
Well, minimum yellow. A deliberate contact with the head.
A deliberate contact with the head is a red. I mean,
the way they've said it, it's not deliberate. It's reckless.
Reckless.
Yeah.
Reckless.
Where they knew what they were doing, or they should have known what they were doing.
No arguments there. Can you agree with that?
I'm okay with that. The kind of difference is if it's a minimum for a yellow, because you can have reckless contact with a head that doesn't do any damage, and I think that you should probably have a penalty sanction. Where,
for example, was it Charlie Yule for Bath? Did anyone see that?
No.
There was a 6 or 7 red cards this weekend.
Which is unprecedented.
I think by
a 3 or 4 red cards now, there's been more red cards in the first 4 rounds of this year's Champions Cup and Challenge Cup than there has been in any previous year in the whole year.
Yeah, it's madness.
It's gone bonkers.
Reckless, I'm okay. Yeah. I'm broadly okay with the reckless.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
So let me just briefly describe the Charlie Yule's one, because I think this will be a case for what you're saying, Phil. So he was in a ruck. He was just arms moving around, grabbing players. And yes, at one point his face was on like the forehead / face area for a moment.
Hang on, Tim. I need to see this, because you're the man who said
no.
Marlon did not kick a man in the head. He shinned him to the nose or something.
Listen, so he had his face on another guy, hand on another guy's face for a moment. there was no injury to the player. Yeah. He was absolutely fine. They had wanted to have a look at it, and in the super slow mo that they got, It looks worse than it is. Got a red.
In that scenario that you're describing there, I actually think the new laws are moving the right direction, because if it's accidental and there's no damage, well, it can just be a penalty, minimum sanction.
I don't think it should be anything.
But
you haven't seen it, I've only seen it once. But yeah.
So one of my and I'm conflicted about these new laws, but one of my takeaways is the best example I can think of is the Kirtley Beale 2 weeks ago. He got a yellow card for, it was complete accidental contact with a head.
Initial contact below the shoulder.
That would now only be a penalty. So that's it's actually a lessening of some of the sanctions. Is the way I'm trying to look on the positive side.
I'm not sure you're right there.
So I mean, they're talking a lot about, you know, contact that starts below the shoulders, creeping up.
It's still.
I was wondering about this because one of the things I do when I play. No, actually, I won't talk about when I play. I'll tell you something I saw in the Glasgow match and Nakarawa.
Who is ridiculous Leone. At offloads. He's unreal. He's,
well, someone grabs him and he basically throws him off. And as he throws him off, they're trying to grab hold of him and they grab his head. He pops up. He carries on running. That has to be in the new directives a sanction. And Steve Diamond spoke. Steve Diamond was great today in the press room because he was asked once about the new directives. I'm not really bothered. Poked a little bit more. He was right. Well, actually, everything we teach rugby players to do is with their head. We teach them to look around. We teach them to recognise space. We teach them to put their head down when they go into contact. It's all with your head. So I don't know how they want to enforce these directives. And furthermore, he doesn't know how to coach them because they change so quickly.
And Matt Luamanu, who again, we had quite a contentious conversation about a month or so ago about Matt Luamanu's red card in the LV Cup, which I felt was much like the yellow card shown to TJ Ioane today, which I didn't think was a yellow card in the Sale Sharks game either. I thought was just a tackle. And I don't understand why it was a yellow card.
We are at peak madness. This has to go the other way.
But Matt Luamanu was sent off again against Timisoara because the player he was tackling, Luamanu was in a crouched position. He was low, relatively low for a massive man like Luamanu. He was low, crouched. The guy who was running into him was also crouched. Therefore, contact was shoulder to head. Red card.
Yeah, but Matt Luamanu was also charging in.
But then again, we've talked about it before.
He's clearly not learned anything from his last one.
Well,
he took
maybe.
All control. He was, by definition, by
But is that not the game of rugby?
No, but he was, by definition, reckless. Game of rugby is about tackling people.
Dime says something else very interesting today, which is whoever is making these laws, whoever they're consulting, it's not him. And I don't think it's any of the directors of rugby or anyone who... I mean, it might be someone who used to play the game. There was an excellent article about this on Twitter, which I think we all read. And it is grandstanding. It's this kind of moral grandstanding by the idiots at the top of the game wanting to make it look safer. And you mentioned it post-game about what Ugo said. Ugo said, actually, the grandstanding is making the game look worse.
Yeah, Ugo Monya. Yeah. He mentioned it briefly in commentary, but I got a sort of more rounded opinion of his before the game when we were watching the Ulster-Claremont game. And I thought, I haven't heard this perspective, so what... He might well write an article about it or talk about it on Rugby Tonight or something. But I thought it was fantastic. And what Ugo Monier said was that, okay, it might have come from the point of view of trying to make rugby safer. Actually, with all these yellow cards, red cards, disciplinary hearings, talking about, you know, getting people everywhere on social media saying thug, red card, all the rest of it. He said, actually, if Ugo said if he was a parent, a mum, let's say, and he was thinking, shall I let my son or daughter play rugby, right now, if you didn't know the game of rugby and you didn't have that history, you might go, oh, God, no, because everyone's talking about it being violent and thugs. Suddenly, rugby, which always got described as a thugs game played by gentlemen, is now just getting thought of as a thugs game.
Yeah.
Which could be counterproductive for what World Rugby maybe are hoping that they're doing.
Now, I want to hunt down these people who are ruining the game, because they are.
Let's also mention the fact this probably does come... I think it comes from a good place because people.
Does it?
Concussion is an issue, and let's think about it. NFL have had class action lawsuits to the tune of
$700 million,
and I think World Rugby will be bricking it. They'll be absolutely crapping themselves that something like that's going to happen with them.
And the problem is, we don't know the science behind it yet, so we're guessing. We're just guessing and ruining the sport.
But do you not think
we're guessing
that
in the right direction? I think that is. Definitely. I mean, in World Rugby's announcement, they talk. They've done a study into head injuries from 1,500 elite matches. They've had more than 600 head injuries from 15. So it's 40% of elite matches result in a head injury.
Can I just ask this question though? And let's just not talk about cards now. Let's just talk about the risks of rugby for a second. I mentioned this regarding George North. If you understand the risks, okay, if the risks are clearly laid out to you, which is if you have multiple head injuries, you may have a reduced life experience or a worse quality of life or whatever it is, and it might be very, very uncomfortable or in some cases fatal. If those risks are clearly explained and understood, and you know your compensation could be in the hundreds of thousands to play this game for a year, where is the problem with that? Where is the problem with saying, yes, it is a dangerous sport. You might break a leg, you might blow out a knee. You know, I'm sure people have died. There's certainly been people paralysed by it. Where is the danger of saying these are the risks of this sport and that will be that?
That's what everyone does every game.
What?
Everyone accepts those risks. Everyone knows those
risks. Yeah, but World Rugby are going down the road of trying to minimise these risks. So if you look at the injury audit, which they put out every year, it's like, oh yeah, what's the biggest injury? Well, this. Okay, let's ban that. And then there's a new biggest risk, so let's ban that. I mean, I understand things like, let's eliminate twisting at rucks, so let's eliminate... you know, there are various things eliminate. I think if you know the risks, play it.
But I think then... I just think I would rather it stayed much more like it is and these directives didn't come in because I want to let the boys play a little bit.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I just think if I accept concussion is an issue, and you know, we don't know what the medical advice is completely, but we know it's a more prevalent issue because of the size of players. I'd like to see a little bit more proactive implementation of stuff by World Rugby. So what they're doing is now trying to disincentivize tackles which might cause that outcome by more yellow and red cards. That's going to ruin games. Completely ruin games.
When you read it, they're trying to affect a change in culture, and they're trying to actively lower the height of the tackle.
No, but this is what I mean.
They don't want yellow and red cards. They want to lower the tackle so there are no yellow and red cards.
Well, then make a law and say if you think it's safer, if you think a shoulder-high tackle is now not safe, then outlaw that.
Effectively what they're doing.
Well, no, it's effectively what they're doing, but it's not what they're doing. Actually doing is there's going to be lots of accidents
I've got a very nifty rule change for you.
What?
You don't need to wrap your arms below the knees. Boom. There you go.
I've got another nifty law change, which maybe they should try. I reckon one day, this might happen.
Go on.
Eliminate the knock-on.
Eliminate the knock-on. Deliberate knock-ons always will be a penalty, always was. But I'd love to see this trial.
I would really like to see that.
Because it would mean the ball's in play more, there'd be less scrums, you wouldn't have people that are as big, and you'd have back rows that are more Jack Clifford size rather than...
I've been talking about eliminating the knock-on since our first season.
Yeah,
you know, eliminate it; it'd be a much safer game. But obviously, people don't think
think you're bonkers. Me and Phil laughed at you and thought you're mad.
Did.
But I'd love to see it.
Yeah.
And the other thing is potentially reduce the number of replacements.
No. Oh, it should be the other way, surely.
No, because now I work and stand in the tunnel quite a lot for games. You become aware in a very different way. When you're there, how I think 14 replacements.
But I like it.
All come on between 50 minutes and 70 minutes. Kind of ruins the game a little bit.
No, do you know what they need to do? You need to have interchanges rather than replacements, because I love the science of interchanges.
I think that'll make it worse, because then you'd have impact guys that were massive.
Yeah, but guess what I want to see?
Even bigger.
You want to see bigger guys?
I want to see seven Helani Alikas.
I love seeing massive hits. I love seeing massive hits. I'm quite happy with things that, as they are.
Do you know, if I was rugby league, I would look at this and go, we want to steal that rugby crowd. How do we do it? And I think I would...
Free for all.
Yeah, I'd probably take my rules the other way. You know, you get paid less, so we're not going to have, you know, the same calibre of players, but we might be able to attract crowds because they'll be able to understand the damn rules.
It's going
to
be a bloodbath as
well. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we'd go there and... You know,
maybe they make
I mean, we'd
it
have
like...
some pretty much cockfights.
Yeah. They'd make it a bit more like ice hockey where, like, the ref will go, right, go, you two, only you two. Maybe all the other players stand around in a circle
and they throw
around them and just say, fight.
They have
fight.
To throw their scrum hat on the floor and take off their little stick mitts, throw them on the floor, then they can get into it.
Do you know what? I'm hearing... Sorry, Phil, go on.
I was just going to say, just one more thing on this... directive. Are you not pleased about the accidental tackle, Tim? Because that's something that you've been calling for a long time.
What's that?
The accidental tackle is creating subjectivity. So the ref can say, like that Skalkberger hit that was being talked about on BT Sport today, like the Kirtley Beale thing. Oh, I don't think he meant it. I think it was just an accident, a rugby incident, for want of another word. It's only going to be a penalty. It's going against something I've been saying for a long time, which is the consistency, and going more towards subjectivity, and something that you've been saying, which is the empathetic approach. So you are going to get less consistent decisions, but it allows the referee to kind of have a little bit more control over that.
Why does there need to be a directive to allow the referee to feel the game and what's going on and try and empathise with what the players are trying to do?
Because otherwise it's against
because
the rules.
Because referees
the
are...
Laws.
No, but it's only now against the law where accidental contact with the head is...
No, that's always been. So contact with the head, as we stand now, you don't need to determine the intent, whether it's accident or not. Contact with the head is contact with the head.
Is that what the law is currently? Really?
Yeah. You make contact with the head, you make contact
with
the head.
I'm sure there must be leeway currently for referees to
interpret. In practice, they do. They interpret how they want.
Okay.
And they do let the boys play. But if you just stick with the rules, which referees don't, because they interpret it. But this is actually putting your suggestion into the law book. So I thought you'd be delighted with that.
Yeah, well, if that is the difference that we see as a result of this, I just fear that what these directives are going to bring is more TMOs, more yellow cards, more red cards for normal tackles like TJ Ioane, or for accidents that then get legislated against. Now, I'm quite encouraged by what I hear from JB. It sounds a bit more like the old JB today.
six red cards is too many.
Steve Parrott said after last week's pod, good pod this week, love the passion. It messaged me on Twitter. He said, incidentally, when I was at school, my teacher taught me about osmosis. Sure, you know what this is, but if not, it's where molecules filter through a semi-permeable membrane to balance out the solutions. I'm wondering if you and JB are osmotic. How attitudes have changed.
It does feel like you two kind of cross over at some points and more angry, less angry, more angry, less angry.
Well, I know. Why don't we be less angry? Can we talk about Glasgow? Can we get back into rugby? Well,
damn right.
Just the final thing on this.
Oh, God, there's more.
Just the very final thing.
Can we have the Ali McBeal rugby law podcast?
is
That's a great idea. Can we get a lawyer? And
Yeah, we'll have Ali McBeal speaking to Jared Rebecca, and we'll just see how they go.
Well, the law of unintended consequences of this, of the effective lowering of the tackle, will or could potentially be more offloads, and that is one of the positives that's been mentioned a few times.
It's a coaching point. Tackle around the waist.
Well, yeah. I do. I completely get
tackle
your point.
Tackle around the waist and lasso the legs.
I completely get your point, Tim, that if someone's dipping into tackles, there are going to be situations where you brush or you...
Yeah, how the hell do you stop...
That's the other coaching point.
How do you stop a pick and go?
Do you know what I would do?
I don't know.
I would, if I was a DOR, maybe the new DOR at Northampton, if that happens, sign... Everyone, you just go out and you go, right, we're only signing people 5'6" or lower.
Yeah, this is exactly right.
Red card.
Imagine Will Skelton trying to get his opposite man there.
I think this is legal, but I can't be sure. But I think what I would do is I'd have one player lying on his chest with the ball held very close to his head, right? And then I'd get two other players to pick him up, like, and maybe grab an arm, grab a leg, like a battering ram.
Yeah, like you're going to break down a door with his head.
Exactly. So we've got two things going on here. You can't touch his head. And also, I don't think you can touch a man in the air like in a
lineup. Yeah, yeah.
So if you touch him, you're screwed.
It's a coaching point. It's a coaching point.
But that, so you're going to need very, very short guys with enormous heads. Short.
Yes.
Real big targets.
Have we got, we need to find the prime, look, shout, I'll tell
our
you what,
Steve
Scout
Elliott.
Britz. Scout Britz has got a big Swede. Little guy, big Swede.
Our friend Steve Elliott is also a little guy with an enormous
massive head.
Like,
you know.
Not particularly. We can all think of one. There you go. Yeah. If you spot someone in the street with an enormous Swede and very short, in fact, just get kids.
I mean,
get Lucy, your daughter, playing.
I'm not using my chimney sweep at the moment. You can use him. right. Glasgow.
Rugby.
Glasgow Racing.
Rugby.
Right. Okay. Well, on the Glasgow front, Johnny Gray has to start for the Lions.
That is a huge re-raise.
That is a ridiculous re-raise.
I mean, it's a reasonable statement to make. He's in the contention, but must start for the Lions.
I'm calling for Itodre.
Wow.
Have you thought of the name selection?
possibly. The guy's immense.
He is immense.
Absolute. His work rate is unreal.
Yeah. He's brilliant.
Well, you know, Glasgow were just brilliant.
Yeah,
1-15 on the weekend, and he it does seem like more and more he is the heartbeat of everything that they do. So it's not an unreasonable claim to say he should be on the Lions tour definitely, but I'm not sure about the start here.
Probably the most competitive position as well. Also, he's certainly up there with most competitive. I mean, another one we mentioned it last week, but fly half of the Lions tour. There's going to be a few people who don't. So, Sexton, Finn Russell, Bigger, Ford, Farrell. If you're only taking three players,
Bigger's not going.
Two of those don't go.
Bigger's not going.
I think on form, Bigger's not going.
I think
Farrell. Farrell will go because Farrell can also cover 12.
Yeah. So I think you're going to. It could just be Bigger missing out. But then you've got four. Outstanding fly halves.
Farrell to start 10. I'm calling it now.
Well, here's the way I look at it. Farrell does not play enough 10 for the national team. Not his fault. Because he's such a good player, he gets moved to 12. Meaning, technically, the best 12 in England probably is going to be Ford. I mean, you've got to say Ford
best
is the
10 is the
best 10.
Best 10.
Yeah, yeah. Because he is a starter, right? So if you had a choice out of the two, you'd probably have to go with Ford. But Ford is not as good as Sexton at 10, in my opinion. So you've kind of got this weird...
Well, hold on. Farrell's going to be playing in the latter stages of European competition as well. That's pretty close to test match level.
Yeah.
But yes, that is fair. But I guess when they're looking at this, the key competition is going to be the Six Nations, isn't it? That is the one where most of the decisions will be made.
Do you not remember Paul O'Connell from the last Lions tour when... He loved Owen Farrell so much. There were so many little videos of him going, I will follow you into battle. I'm with you. You drive us around. I'm with you. Sorry about the accent.
Yeah.
Anyway, he loved Owen Farrell.
I love Owen Farrell. He's going to be a great 12 for sale one day. because he doesn't play there for his national team, it is a bigger claim. And do you know what? I've got a feeling just watching Finn. I mean. Actually, do you know what? I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to take back my statement about the Six Nations being the key competition. The key competition is going to be the Heineken Cup or the European Champions Cup.
Yeah.
Because if Finn Russell can get that Glasgow team into the last stages, you're probably going to have Finn Russell, you're going to have Farrell, and you're going to have Sexton all playing right towards the end. And the interesting thing is, you obviously won't afford because he is in the lower competition, but he is the incumbent in the England shirt. That is why it's interesting.
But this performance on Friday night, Racing would have been nilled if they hadn't scored with 2 minutes to go. And there's more Lions than we've even mentioned, or more potential Lions. Seymour and Hogg.
Yeah.
Out wide.
Seymour, Hogg, three of their props. I mean, you know, the props look very good.
Yeah, Fagerson, and Fraser Brown, the hooker, look really, really, really good in the back row.
Now, before we get too carried away with Glasgow, let's just... Spare a thought for poor old Racing. Racing. Yes, they are French champions. Yes, they look very powerful on paper.
Yes, they wear blazers in cup finals, so we hope they get to more.
Exactly. And they're the vogue team. But they're so old or so fat, or in some cases, both. Carter, magnificent player. 34, maybe?
I love the little stats. The BT Sport where Iwobi came off. Carry, zero. Offload, zero. Tackle, zero.
That's got to be wrong there, right?
No, it's not.
Oh, God.
So he didn't attempt a single run with the ball. It suggests he was injured. So he played for 50 minutes or whatever it was.
He probably feels guilty. He's like, I am injured, but look, you're paying me so much. Let me go out there. I'll just pass the ball.
I mean, Casey...
So, do you know what his highest stat in terms of the count would have been?
Kicks.
Missed tackles. Four missed tackles.
You're kidding me.
he actually did make more tackles than that. But so, yeah, zero runs, obviously. Zero meters made. Zero clean breaks. Zero defenders beaten. Zero offloads. Zero line-out steals, but that's not too
unusual.
Sorry,
stop looking at Thomas Francis's stats. We're talking about Dan Carter.
Exactly.
Eight tackles, four missed tackles.
Yeah, so you've got Ben Tamifuna, who needs to sort his eye out. Whatever his name is, needs to sort out. I mean, look, you're 24 stone. Get to 20 stone. No one's going to, it doesn't matter. Get to 18 stone, you'll still be a ferocious scrimmager.
It's like going back to Matthew Bastereau. Matthew Bastereau, you fight 18 stone's great. 16 stone's better and cut your barnet off.
In the European Champions Cup final last year, we tweeted, because it was Tamifuna was facing up against Mako Vunipola in the scrum, and we tweeted something on the lines of Tamifuna makes Mako Vunipola look like Arnold Schwarzenegger in his prime. Because he does. It's incredible.
But hang on. Not only you got him, you've got Chris Morsoe, who must be 36 now?
37?
And, on top of that, you've got... who was the guy who looked ridiculously out of shape? Oh, it was mentioned numerous times on my WhatsApp group. No, never mind. Casey Lau... I can't even say his name. Lalua is about 34, 35. I mean, this is an old team. Oh, of course, there's our old friend Teddy Thomas, who conceded... Teddy Thomas, who likes to concede two tries and score one. Occasionally.
And Bryce Doolan, who's brilliant when they're going forward, but in a tough night up in Glasgow, nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
So above all of this, you've got the controversy that's going on at the moment. The Usun controversy.
Oh, yeah.
24 years of age.
Retired. Sad. Sad to see him go to take a commercial director's position in South Africa.
Oh, good for him. With the Cheetahs, by any chance?
Maybe a short-term commercial director's position with the Cheetahs. And then the rumour is...
Is this like a Denny Solomona kind of
retirement
deal?
He's used
I'm retiring.
The Denny defence, yeah, I think so. He's retiring. So the rumours coming out of France are he's retiring from his contract this year. He's going to have a short-term contract in South Africa. And then next year, he's already signed for Montpellier on €1 million a year.
Right, how bad can his life be? He is on a huge contract anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just say...
Because he was on a huge contract because he was supposed to not be playing for South Africa when he signed for Racing Metro.
Do you know what?
Do you mean Dean Carter's Racing 92?
Racing 92.
Maybe that's the problem. It's Dan Carter's team. But this guy doesn't sound like a particularly good bloke to me.
No.
You've signed your contract... You went back to your national team. I mean, I know there's a lot of romance about playing for your national team. Oh, you should do it whenever. But if you've made a commitment to people that pay your wages, that pays your mortgage, which feeds your family, you've made that commitment.
Friesland. Reese Friesland.
Yeah, exactly. If you made a commitment, you've made a commitment. And then he's done this kind
of... But you can't... That's a commitment that the laws don't permit you to make.
Well, yeah, look, there's...
I'm a bit unsure on that commitment.
But then to retire... We know he's not retiring because he's 24.
Yeah, this is ludicrous. Whatever's going on with this is ridiculous. You know,
get your money, take your medicine, play out your contract, and that will be that. But I mean, it's a stupid move from a rugby point of view because he's 24. And at this level... You can't really afford to take a year out because it is so competitive anyway.
Again, yeah. It's another, I mean, this. I guess this is what comes with the territory of money and ever-increasing finances and things like that. It starts to, there's that probably a diagonal line, morals and money on two axis, and questionable morals, and because it sounds like something you would hear,
do you know what,
on transfer deadline day from a footballer.
I happen to think that you're wrong there. I actually think if you want to look at questionable morals, it's not now in the ultra professional age or just the semi-professional age or whatever it is in the amateur era, where clubs would hoard players with, you know, little backhanders, and they'd use things like county teams to get you involved, and if you move from one team to another you wouldn't get a shot at representative rugby. I mean, if you look at how the game has evolved, it is so much cleaner now than the filthy days of banning players for playing rugby league and all rest of it. It's far better.
This is all about money, or it appears to be all about money.
Yeah, because he's just not a good guy. No, that's yeah, all it is. He's just not a good guy.
I think it's more on him than
I mean, are all the other Racing players clawing to get out? I mean, if they were all clawing to get out, I'd say maybe it's on Racing. But it's just this one guy because he's got a load of money elsewhere.
So is Denny Solomona just not a stand-up guy? Or is...
That's a good question.
Or is this just...
If you've got a contract and the contracts are time specific, so you're contracted for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is, if you're not going to see out that contract, then yeah, there is some questions over you. Because Denny Solomona could have seen out the next 2 years of his CAS contract and then signed for Sale or Saracens or whoever he wants on that big money.
I've got to be careful here because I could become a massive hypocrite. I think I said the other week that you should be able to do basically whatever you want, which is best for you as a player. At the end of the day, it is a profession. I think Denny Solomona is different because of the amounts of money involved. You know, because he was being paid a pittance compared to what he's worth. Well, actually, judging by today, he's probably been paid. Was probably overpaid by Castlefield.
If you could have just
Castlefield.
If you could have just caught one of those three chances that he had, he would have been worth every penny. But yeah, he didn't catch a single one of them.
So no, the Hooson thing just sounds like he's been a bit of an idiot. And the fact that he wants to sit out the game of all rugby for God knows how long just to get his way doesn't. Mind you, Montpellier have been on a bit of a spending spree, haven't they? If they're going to buy Goosen and Gloucester in 1 week.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm just trying to think what I would. What happens in other industries, and I guess it's probably quite similar. There will be radio presenters who might get approached by someone else, another station. We want you. I've got a year clause in my contract that I'm not allowed to work for anyone else afterwards.
Mm.
And you sign that contract, and then I know people that have had that and
disregarded it.
And then disregarded it because it won't stand up in court because it's restriction of trade, etc. But kind of, anyway.
So on this, the Racing president, I can't remember his name.
Jackie Lorenzetti.
Good knowledge.
So he put in a clause in Hooson's contract last year when it was being renegotiated. It was £1 million buyout clause to stop exactly this scenario, which is why Hooson's got to do this back route in order to retire, to go and take up a temporary job, to come back in. And that's what makes it look even worse.
That's really low.
Yeah, that just...
It also raises questions about the French so-called salary cap. I mean, if you can pay one player £1 million who's not even...
We're talking about George Ford getting with the exchange rate, possibly not too far short of that.
I mean, I need to know more about the French system, okay? But George Ford could go as a... Well, no, he couldn't go as an excluded player, actually. But he is a fly half. And he is going to a team with no other stars. This is different. This is Montpellier with loads of stars and loads of money. So I don't know how they'd fit him in. Because, say, if your salary cap is 8 million, you could only get 8 Goosens to play.
Well, their salary cap's 10.5 million, so it is.
You can't even have
10%.
Yeah, you couldn't even have a whole team of Goosens. So it raises...
Proportionally, it's about the same as George Ford.
Yeah, and Montpellier and Sale are miles apart in star power.
that is true.
Yeah.
I can confirm that.
Yes, we can confirm.
Yeah.
So, you know, George Ford would be completely different. I mean, do you reckon... Actually, let's just use that as a nice segue. Do you think George Ford would have made a difference today?
To Sale?
To Sale Sharks?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
See, yeah. This was the last game of the weekend, and
have we given enough time to Glasgow, by the way? Because Glasgow fans, you should be mighty proud of your Warriors. They are Warriors.
Yeah. Six thumbs up from the team.
Yeah.
Let's just revisit that quickly. The big test for me now: can Glasgow turn over Munster? They do that. They're pretty much through, I think.
Yeah, they won three out of the top of the group. You'd normally talk about the kind of 18-point mark if they. So they're on 13 at the moment with two games to go.
Yeah. So
in fact, let's just look at the polls and kind of just look at where they stand, and because there's two more rounds, the which will happen in January. The next round five will be the middle of January, I think.
Yeah.
And
January 20th is that
consecutive game? Weeks? Yeah. So it's middle and last weekend.
So Saracens are going to be seeded number one, home quarter final and home country semi final if they make it there.
They're the only team who've won four from four.
Like you say, Munster have got the game in hand, but it's looking like it will be potentially Glasgow and Munster progressing from that. But possibly not. Well, no, one of those for sure. But the pool two is amazing with all three teams on 13 points and Zebre on zero.
Yes, and the real point about that table is that Toulouse have played Zebre twice. So you've got Wasp, Toulouse and Connacht all on 13 points, but Toulouse have already got their 10 points from their two Zebre games.
So I don't like the qualification. I think they could tinker with this a little bit. How hard would it be to make it eight pools? And then either you have top one from each going through, and then it takes away that advantage of Zebre. Because two extra qualifiers, whoever gets the Italian team or
Tim, I'm glad you mentioned this, because I know how you take away the advantage of Zebre.
What?
You take away Zebre. Just get rid of him. Ditch him. Well, I mean, it's simply no good for the Italian teams to be there.
I agree.
Zebre would be much better from playing against Timisoara, Saracens, or NSI, or someone like that.
Yeah. They're probably battered by Timisoara, Saracens. Be an absolute hiding.
No, that would take it away. That's good with me.
Yep. Gone.
I'm down with that.
So, it looks like it's Wasps or Connacht. Who are going to be top in that group, pool two.
But potentially both going through, yeah?
Yeah.
Potentially, yeah.
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 Because they could get to around about 20 points, potentially.
Yeah, you'd expect them both to go through, actually, assuming they win their remaining games.
So Toulon have a chance of going through, but probably unlikely because they've got to visit Saracens.
Yes.
On their final match.
Yeah, no, just quickly, I watched the Scarlets-Toulon game, and Scarlets did very well against an enormous Toulon pack who just played one way. But I thought Scots were going to lose it because the ref was insistent on giving Toulon penalty after penalty after penalty, kickable penalty as well. And I think Lee Halfpenny missed four kicks, which was very unlike him. Mm. And Scots deserved their win. It was a good performance by him.
Now, are they in the running for a qualification spot here? Because they've got...
No.
Do you not think?
Not really.
Well,
if they won their two remaining games, bonus point victories, then yes, they would go through.
Because
they'd be on 20 points, but they've got to go to Saracens and they have got Sale at home.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, isn't it?
Yeah. You'd say it's too far. Even if they won both those with bonus points, which they're not going to beat Saracens with a bonus point. They'd still only
there
get to
18. Saracens have been the only undefeated team. I mean, there's three runners-up spots to be had. So I don't think it's impossible.
Two.
There's three, isn't it?
There's five pools.
Oh, five pools, three runners-up.
Three runners-up.
It is very unlikely. There's teams in much better positions than they are.
I mean, especially going to Saracens to try and... Although that is last. So, but even when Saracens take their foot off the gas a little bit and make changes, it's still...
Yeah,
it's still a tough team. It's phenomenal. Frankie. It's phenomenal.
So you're saying basically
because they'll just go, yeah, we'll rest Marrow and
Will Skelton in,
Jim Hamilton.
So got Saracens going through. You're probably gonna have Connacht and Wasps. You're probably gonna have Munster and Glasgow at the moment. Would you say?
Yeah.
Leinster looking good.
Yeah. Ulster is on thin ice now.
Yeah,
really thin ice.
But so as it stands, it looks like the three. The three losers would come from the Glasgow Munster group, the Wasp Connacht group, and the Leinster Montpellier group. You would say,
agreed.
Yep, there you go.
And right, Ulster.
Can they do it? I mean, they've got two wins, haven't they?
Again, can do mathematically, it. Yes.
Did they lose against Bordeaux?
They have played Clermont both. But they've played both their Clermont games, which so they've got.
They lost against Bordeaux in Bordeaux.
Yeah.
They've got Exeter away, who are looking a bit more resurgent. Got a win at Bordeaux, and they've got Bordeaux at home, which you would imagine them to turn over at home.
And at the interesting point about the Exeter game, do you see who played fly half?
I did, Henry Slade.
And got a man of the match performance.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. Mm. Very interesting.
Which came out, which was just after the rumour and then Rob Baxter denial that there was any potential move to Bath. Mm. Which we believe did happen last summer.
Yes, we do believe this. So this is a weird one. I mean, I think that news is just leaked out late from last summer, because I don't think it's a goer right now.
No.
And if Bath spent 600k on Slade to be their new number 10, they're mad.
You reckon?
Oh, insane. I mean, he's
so unproven. 600k, you need someone who is a proven.
You need
operator.
Aaron Cruden. I mean, it's just. It isn't even a goer.
Yeah, it's too much.
Yeah, you've got a guy who's a very good rugby player. We don't even know his best position. And his samples, his collection of work at 10. It's pretty minuscule, actually. Two, three games?
Small and patchy, yeah.
Yeah, there's small, and not even that good.
The more I look at it, the more I look at it, the more I want George Ford to just patch up his differences with Bath.
No, I want him to go to Newcastle or Sale. The more that the talent is spread out and the more competitive the league, the better for everyone. Might be worse for the Premiership clubs in Europe, but the better for better for the competition of the Premiership and probably better for the English team.
Briefly then, another big talking point from the week then. I mean, it happened after our last podcast. We all had our say on it on last week's podcast. But the six-week ban for Dylan Hartley, there was quite a strong reaction. For example, we got a tweet. Chris. Hold on, sorry. Mark, sorry. Coincidental that it was a 6-week ban. There's a lot of people saying this, saying it looked very fishy. The fact that he's available Six Nations.
Not only does it sound fishy, it should be fishy. He's England captain. I mean, the whole point of rugby, to a large degree, is you join a club and you meet some guys there and you look after your mates and the older boys. I mean, imagine you're at Sedgley Park, right, and your best player at this serious level that you used to play gets caught. I don't know. Drink driving or something.
Or let's say something that's not drink driving. Let's say you've got a really big game and your massively influential tight head prop is injured.
Yes!
And it's cold, so let's flood the pitch with water.
Exactly.
And it frozen off.
I mean,
allegedly that happened.
Hypothetically,
we might know a tight head prop that hypothetically was injured and that might have hypothetically happened before an important
game. God, that'd be
game.
Awful if that hypothetically happened.
And if it caused relegation of a certain team from a certain league. That'd be
a scandal. Thank God that's never happened, even hypothetically. Yeah.
But hold on. Do you know the makeup of the sighting panel that gave Dylan Hartley his ban?
I'm hoping it's Dylan Hartley's mum, his brother, and Eddie Jones.
Two Welshmen from the WRU and an Italian from the Italian Rugby Football Union.
There you go. Move on.
That would be my advice. I think it's a mid-level offence.
I think the ban's right.
I think the ban's spot on.
Let me just
get over
develop
it.
This point, right? Which is... When did rugby become a vehicle to be the paragon of virtue? We don't need everything transparent. We don't need everything to be... I mean, I just... One of the things I love about rugby, and the point I was trying to make about, it's Sedgley Park, say if something went wrong, the whole club tries to get that person back playing ASAP. It's an all-boys network for good reason. Why can't you build positive credit, for want of another word? He's England captain. He's won 13 games for England. This hasn't happened for a long time. So what if they let him off a bit? Now, they haven't, as it happens.
Yeah.
What if they did?
They categorically haven't.
Well, no, I think that... No, I don't agree with that perspective. I think the six-week ban was right. I think that the people that were saying that he should have been banned for life, shouldn't play for England, the Lions went wildly over the top. But you would be amazed at how many people were saying that. And print journalists. I made the mistake of thinking that because it was called the Independent, that the Irish Independent was in some way kind of quite a liberal, deep-thinking kind of newspaper.
Not my kind of newspaper.
Fortunately, some of our Irish listeners highlighted the fact that don't think of it in those terms, because I could not believe what I was reading in Irish
written
press. And the only thing that concerns me about that is I've seen a lot of English journalists going for Dylan Hartley. Stephen Jones was saying the ban wasn't long enough, should have been much, much more.
I know.
But I wonder if those same journalists that were from Ireland that were giving Dylan Hartley so much stick would be saying the same if it was Sean O'Brien.
Yeah.
I don't think they would.
No. What if I made you a deal? Right. I'll make this deal for anyone. And the deal is this. You can have 13 international victories in a row, but after every 13, your guy's going to get a red card. You'd probably take that deal. I mean, it comes part and parcel of what Hartley is. Now, whether he should be at Northampton or not, I don't know. Maybe Northampton should move on because he is a disaster for them. But for England, absolutely fine. And I think 13 victories, one red card, great return.
So
good business.
Even though Hartley will be available, he won't have played a proper game of rugby for 2.5 months.
Yeah.
Same as the Autumn Internationals, though, really.
It is. You're quite right. I still think he would start. But I was almost looking forward to him not being available because two things. I really want to see Jamie George get a prolonged run starting. And secondly, I'm not sure who the captain would be if Dylan Hartley wasn't available.
Marrow.
Rob Shaw has done it in the past. Pressure was a bit too much for him. They talk about the leadership group of Farrell and Brown.
Farrell's good, but I think Farrell's
got too much pressure already on his shoulders.
Yeah, but he loves it.
He's
you can just tell that he loves it.
I wouldn't want to put that on him. Marrow or Launchbury, are they going to be starting? Are they guaranteed starters, Marrow and Launchbury?
There was a time.
I'm not sure. Launchbury is playing so well. Cruz is playing so well. Laws was man of the match in the last game against Australia.
Do you know, there was a time when Martin Johnson was England captain, and I think he was on the bench against Italy. And throughout that pack, you had, I'm sure, Neil Back had captain the team. You had Dawson had captain the team.
You had Vickery.
You had Delalio. Yeah.
I'm
not sure if Corey was playing. Jason Leonard certainly did.
Richard Hill.
I'm not sure if he did. I'm sure he would have because of the stature of the man.
Yeah.
But, you know,
the leadership group.
Where you need to be, you know.
Yeah.
So it would be quite good to see who would be the next guy. But actually,
do you know what would also be really good? Is to see how this Eddie Jones England team fares against New Zealand. We're not going to blooming see it. The fixture list for 2017 is out.
But New Zealand are playing at Twickenham.
I know.
They're playing against the Barbarians.
That's just rubbing it in.
Is that right?
Yeah. England are not going to play New Zealand. Are they going to play them before the World Cup?
I don't presume, 2018 hasn't been announced yet, so they just, must
it's
do.
Ridiculous.
I know what my play would be if I was the Barbarians. I would appoint Eddie Jones as coach of Barbarians.
Yes. This needs to happen.
Yeah, and then select the England team.
So England are playing Australia, Samoa,
I can't remember.
South Africa, and another.
But I mean, you have to ask, who is making these playing timetables? Is it Don King? I mean, it feels very boxing promotery to keep these two teams apart.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, why not?
Well, maybe we're going to see the first box office pay-per-view rugby match when they finally meet each other.
Out of interest, when do you think England will lose the JB Cup?
To Ireland in Dublin.
Do you reckon?
This Six
and
Nations,
then who will own the next JB Cup then?
What is it? I still don't understand.
The JB Cup is the longest active winning streak by a tier one nation.
But you're just talking about the people that beat. So New Zealand currently have it, and it's only when someone beats New Zealand that it comes into force.
So England currently have the longest winning streak.
13, right.
Behind them, it's probably either Wales on 3 or New Zealand on 3.
Yes.
So it would go to one of those two or both of those two, because you could have dual holders.
Yeah.
Oh, got you. Okay.
And then when they...
It's nonsensical, really.
It's not nonsensical. It's a brilliant idea, as proven by Twitter.
But if there is ever dual winners, then they should be forced to play each other.
Immediately.
Straight
after the game.
Yeah. With no rules.
And the closest venue to the two venues that they played in, they just have to fly them straight there.
Exactly.
And they play.
Yeah.
The closest international ground, they've just got to get there.
Well, like the equidistant international ground, so there's no advantage to one side or another.
Yeah.
Because JB Cup's a big deal.
Yeah. And, everyone the TV broadcast. It doesn't even have to be in front of a live crowd, or just let anyone in, wherever it is.
Yeah, I spoke to the guy who runs the Rayburn Shield, which I love this idea, which is basically... I like to call it the WWE belt of rugby.
Yeah.
And the poor guy's been doing it since 1990-something, trying to get recognition. I think we should give that a real push, because it's a great idea.
We gave him recognition a while. I think we put it on a lot of people's radars a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he's really working on it. And he said to me, whatever you do, don't make it sound like a vanity project. And at that point, I lost interest, really.
And that's where you thought, ooh, vanity.
Yeah.
The JB Cup.
The JB Cup.
Yeah, I had all these historical names. Like, forget that.
Excellent. Shall we look ahead?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Pro 12 fixtures first.
These are derby matchups.
Correct. Christmas derbies. So, Friday 23rd, we've got Italian derby, Treviso hosting Zebre.
Yeah.
Don't care. Next.
And Irish, Ulster hosting Connacht.
Definitely care. It will be Ulster at home, however.
I hope you're right, Tim.
Ulster.
It'll be a pride night at the Kingspan.
Proud Christmas. Then, Monday the 26th. So Boxing Day,
or what do they call it, St Stephen's Day in Ireland?
Do they call it
St Stephen's Day? I think I'm right.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Just want to be respectful to our Irish listeners. I'm pretty sure it's St Stephen's Day, but anyway,
St Stephen's Day, 26th. So Cardiff hosts the Dragons.
Cardiff,
give me Cardiff.
Yeah, Cardiff.
Edinburgh hosts Glasgow.
Glasgow.
Give me Glasgow.
That'll be good one to watch on Boxing Day.
That will be quite a good one. Although the best one, Boxing
is that
going
to be at Murrayfield?
It will be, yes.
Wow, it will be absolutely not packed out. Can't wait for that one.
The best game is the 5:30 kickoff, which is Munster hosting Leinster.
Oh, tasty. Box office stuff.
This would be good as a European semi. Right.
we're going to have more than a semi for this one. Lads. Should we come clean on why we're laughing?
No. Right.
Fine.
Leinster. Even though Munster are at home, I think Leinster are a much more rounded team.
I think you saw the difference between, like many, many teams, I think you saw the difference between Munster at home and away and at home.
Yeah.
And having visited Thoma Park, it's rugby is the religion in that part of town, and on Boxing Day,
bumper crowd,
packed
out to the rafters.
Wow,
give me Munster.
Yeah, I'm going Munster.
Then on Tuesday, so really spread out games. Tuesday 27th, we've got Ospreys.
Little and often, that's how you want it, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. I've no idea how this is going to pan out. I literally don't know. If you do
Ospreys
know
hosting Scarlets,
yeah. If you know anything about these two teams, just find us on Twitter. Let me know.
Scarlett's got a good win against Toulon this weekend.
Yeah.
And Ospreys probably had a very easy Challenge Cup game. So Ospreys at home for me.
Ospreys at home.
Nah, Scarlett's away.
Then, Premiership.
Yes.
The Avicii.
Let's get into
it. The Avicii Premiership.
So there's some very interesting matchups. Probably, well, first and last are probably the biggest. Fridays and Mondays games are probably the biggest. So Northampton host Sale Sharks.
Oh, wow, what a massive pressure game.
Sale for me.
For both directors of rugby, this is huge. In fact, do you reckon this is bigger for Jim Mallander than
Steve Byman by
a mile? Hey, this could be a nail in the coffin.
And the normal circumstances, Diamond would be expected to lose this. Diamond wins this, and he's back in business, and Mallander's out of a job. And of course, they're old coaching buddies. This is really tasty, actually.
Yeah, this is good.
There's a lot of storylines going on with this one. But ooh. I think it's worth actually pointing out that for both these sides, this is a career defining, potentially for Jim Mallander. It's a season defining few weeks because Northampton and Sale both play each other, Bristol, and then I think Northampton have, is it Newcastle and Sale have Quins as well, or Gloucester and Quins as well. So three winnable games coming up for both these sides.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sale for me.
I think Northampton will edge it. I'm just thinking again, the atmosphere, as disappointed as that crowd will be, again, like Munster, it's a rugby town, massively passionate fans, and I think I'll find
Munster's a province, mate.
Province, yeah, you're right. The six counties of Munster, yeah, obviously. I think Northampton will eke out a win, but I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Tim. I'm not really looking forward to it because I think it's probably going to be a terrible game. Because the last few times I've watched Northampton on a Friday night...
Horrific.
Yeah, it's not been pretty. Sale don't travel well. Northampton aren't playing well. So much pressure.
Fascinating to see.
It will be fascinating. I'm not sure it'll be a great game.
I can't wait to see the selection as well. Who Jim Allender puts in. Is there any disconnect between some of those experienced guys he left out? Well, we will see.
Yes.
Saturday, Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve. Newcastle travel from their plastic pitch to another plastic pitch to take on Saracens at the Allianz.
Saracens.
Next. I mean, we like the way Newcastle play. They've been one of the surprise packages of the season, but
yeah, they're 5 from 5, including 2 on the road.
It's going to be five from 6.
Yes. Then the televised game, 2 p.m.
By the way, that's harsh on Newcastle having to go to London on Christmas Eve.
Yeah. Harsh on Newcastle. How about harsh on Leicester going to Exeter?
Yeah, it's probably
that's a nightmare. Someone's got to go to Exeter and someone's got to go to London.
Yeah.
Newcastle to Exeter would be the real one.
Yeah.
Well, you'd fly, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I suppose you can fly.
In fact, they probably will be flying. Yeah, they definitely will be flying to London, you'd have thought. Anyway,
yeah.
Enough of that banter.
2 p.m, Wasps versus Bath. Wasps at home.
I'm working at this one. I'm so excited about it.
Do you think Wasps are very good starting 15? The starting 15 is excellent, but that kind of layer underneath just isn't quite there.
They've got a lot of depth in the back, so I'm not sure where the depth in the forwards is.
Mm.
Again, there's another interesting storyline. I would love it if it was Sippers Ford.
For the Wasps 10 shirt next season.
Ford against his future employers. Although, if I were him, if that did happen, I'd stipulate if I was George Ford that the Wasps would have to change that kit because the Bath kit he's in at the minute is lovely, but I hate that Wasps road marking.
Well, yeah, Canterbury Bath compared to Under Armour Wasps, Canterbury wins every single time.
100%.
But at home, do Wasps win?
Bath, I think, win this. You know, I couldn't tell you why. I just have a feeling.
So Bath have got an easier running because they've been playing in the Challenge Cup, so they managed to rest a couple of people the week before last. They had mostly a full strength side. And have you seen the Bath team sheet? Who's come back into it? It'll be very important for their season.
Francois Lowe.
Wow.
Is back playing. So nice time of year to get Flo Lowe back.
Yes.
When is what's-his-face available in the new year? Willie LaRue?
January. Sometime.
I don't know. I thought it would be straight after the Autumn Internationals, but clearly not. We need to...
No, it's his Japan contract that's the issue, not the Autumn Internationals.
Ah, right.
So it is January.
Give me Wasps at home.
Yeah, just Wasps at home.
Yeah. Then...
tasty again.
As mentioned, Exeter, Leicester.
Exeter have to win this. I mean, Leicester just can't travel.
Yeah.
I can't see it going any other way.
100% with that. It'll be interesting to see whether Henry Slade starts at 10 or whether it's just another little one-off.
Now, I will have to pull back the curtain a bit here. I can't remember if the podcast cut out before or after we were talking about podcasting. When does the next podcast come out? Christmas Eve or the day after Boxing Day or the day after Boxing Day?
I'm working Boxing Day at Bristol, Worcester.
So it's going to be the day after Boxing Day.
The day after, but that's all right because we'll have all that rugby to digest.
The day after Boxing Day, there's a game.
Yeah.
On the 27th.
So it would make sense.
Quins play Gloucester.
It would make sense to maybe pod straight after Quins Gloucester.
Yeah.
And then we've got all the games from the Pro 12 will have been played as well.
Yeah. That bother? Okay. Okay, let's do that then.
Yeah, I think that's on.
So it's not going to be next Monday, chaps. Not that anyone's going to listen to it because there's no commutes going on, but it'll be
Tuesday night.
Wednesday evening/Wednesday morning.
And then are we going to be back on the Sunday?
Well, then there's a run of games, which is Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yes. So it might as well do it on the Sunday then. Yeah.
Sunday the 1st.
Because people are back to work on... It will be Tuesday the 3rd.
Yeah, it will be the 3rd that people are back. So we could do Sunday or Monday.
Yeah.
Cool.
Anyway, thanks for sitting through our
production meeting.
Team production meeting there. But the final game, I see going Exeter's way. And then, bigger than this one.
This is big. This is as big as Northampton Sale for the team's seasons. Because this is even more of a relegation decider.
Yeah, Bristol Worcester. I mean, a Bristol win and the whole league looks completely different.
I think this is a Bristol win. I almost can't see it going any other way. No, that's not true. it's so difficult because I honestly thought there's a lot to be cheerful about in Worcester. You know, they played some kids. They got two wins. They got one win. They got two draws.
Yeah.
They looked, you know, performances were fairly good. Marco Mama makes a shed load of tackles every game. And then they get all the big names back and they do nothing. So it just really depends. On the other hand, Bristol's performances have just, they have improved exponentially from where they were. So, yeah, Bristol win for me.
I'm going to go for a Worcester win. Having Big Ben Teo back.
Big Ben.
Making yards through the middle.
I think we're going to see peak Teo on Monday.
It depends if you get declining Gav, because Gav will take Teo.
No, on Sunday. Teo. Monday?
Monday.
Yeah, declining Gav or peak Teo.
Yeah. No. If Gav plays, hear me, I'll believe me later, Teo's over.
He's going to pick him up and walk along like a suitcase. Like
exactly.
Gav
has played half a game against Harlequins and had then got a dead leg against someone else.
Something I forgot to mention on a previous podcast that is that when I worked at the Bath LV Cup game recently, I went to the pub and I stood in the exact spot and I looked around at the exact security camera where Big Gav got clocked.
Wow.
Was there a chalk there's outline
a little
of a body?
There's an outline of a body and there's a little tour. Takes people to go and see it.
Which pub is that, by the way?
It's the one, I can't remember what it's called, but it's right opposite the Hilton Hotel in Bath, just at the bottom of the hill.
It's the one where we watched
near the
World Cup final from.
Oh, yeah. The one
ship,
at the top.
This one was at the bottom of the hill, not at the top.
No, was it?
Yeah.
I like the ship. We had a gay old time there.
Yeah, it was very good. Cool. Final game, Quins-Gloucester. Quins at home. Quins who've had two very easy games against Timisoara Saracens.
But Gloucester looking different team the last few matches. But I'll go for Quins at home. They're good at home. They beat Saracens at home.
Gloucester look a different team two games out of every three.
Yeah.
And for good and bad.
Quins at home. Yeah, Quins at home.
Quins at home.
Which wraps up another Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. So thank you very much for listening. At Rugby Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter. We wish you a Merry Christmas and
a Happy New Year.
We'll be back before the New Year.
Oh, yeah,
so
of course.
We'll save the Happy New Year. But thank you very much. And we'll save any heartfelt thanks for listening through the year, because it's not, well, again, we'll have another podcast before we're done there. So in the meantime, just leave a review on iTunes, tell us what you reckon at Rugby Podcast, and yeah, nice one.
Cheers.
Happy Christmas, Phil.
Happy Christmas, Tim.
Happy Christmas, JB.
Bye bye, Facebook Live.
Bye bye. Thank you very much for listening.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.